Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, hope you're doing well. It's Genuinely Grace here with the podcast. And as I'm recording this, there are birds tweeting outside my little garden studio. And it's gone 9 o'clock at night. It's just amazing. It feels really good just to hear some birds, because the weather has just been so horrible, hasn't it? It makes such a difference. And I just want some sunshine. I guess lots of other people feel the same way when it's kind of just constant rain, just constant. Anyways, things are changing, right? We hope. And next weekend is our Champneys retreat that's been rescheduled goodness knows how many times, and it's allegedly happening. It's going to be just amazing to meet real people. Really looking forward to it. So if that's something that interests you, obviously the May one is booked unless someone drops out. And then we have a retreat at the end of June, June the 26th. And I think we've got another one in September. I'm also planning some day retreats by the sea, only in Essex. Sadly not Cornwall, I wish. But let me know if that's something of interest. I'm just going to be putting those out very soon. They'll be very small and intimate events. For after all these months, I'm finally talking about potentially getting to do some stuff in person, which feels super exciting. It's been another really varied week in the Sober Club. We've done some great things, not least had a Q&A with William Porter. A lot of people asking William's tips and advice about coming out of lockdown. So I interviewed him as well. So I thought we would share that with you on the podcast today. So it's going to be William Porter, who is, of course, author of Alcohol Explained. And I thought it would be a really good idea to ask him to just remind us yet again on, you know, what alcohol actually does to the body. Because I think that it doesn't matter how many times you hear this stuff, I think it's always good to hear the different perspectives, and just the way William explains stuff is really good, because there's none of the kind of fluff that that I sometimes come out with. it's real hard facts and science. So we make quite a good team, because I'll do the kind of fluff bit and he can do the factual stuff. But this is someone who's done an awful lot of research into what alcohol really is. And I know that sounds ridiculous, because as I've said many times before, of course we know what alcohol is. Of course we know it's addictive. Of course we know that there's nothing wrong with us, that alcohol is an addictive substance, and it's fine while it's fine until it isn't. But I think it's sometimes good just to be reminded that it is a depressant. This can get so confusing, because of course we also think of it as something that lifts us and makes us feel cheery and etc. But the reality is, it is a depressant, and it absolutely exacerbates any kind of mental health issues. And I think this week, probably more than any, I've really noticed the news stories around issues with mental health, that unbelievably ridiculous waiting lists, just how difficult it is for young people with a mental health crisis. And, I just think that really alcohol has got to be brought into this equation. I haven't actually seen the programme yet changing the subject slightly. There was a programme with Davina McCall talking about the menopause the other night on TV, and I haven't actually managed to catch it up with it yet. So I don't actually know. But, he is hoping that they absolutely talked about alcohol on that programme. I really hope they did, not least because I know that Zoe Ball was one of the contributors. Meg Matthews was a contributor. Davina McCall, obviously, as a presenter. So right there, you've got three women who have ditched the booze. So I really hope they brought that into the equation, because if not, that's just an absolute travesty. You cannot talk about, menopausal symptoms and mood swings and anxiety and, hormonal issues and still be drinking. You know, it absolutely has to be talked about. So anyways, William will remind us of some of that stuff. And we have a bit of a chat too about this whole anxiety of coming out of lockdown thing. Of course, for some people, it's that they got sober during lockdown. So it really is going to be a very big change when they venture out into the wide world. So we discuss that. But also even people who've been sober for years, they're very settled in their sobriety. But the whole pandemic has just knocked them for six. And, they've lost confidence and, just about everything else. So many people have felt like they've their world's got smaller, on some level. Well, probably their waistline's got bigger. Mine certainly has. And I think, everyone has to kind of navigate this their own way. So we have a chat about that with William. But before we do that, we've teamed up this week with a unique drink. I mean, just unique. The marketing stuff says, raise your glass to a new kind of mindful drinking and socialising, hemp-based endorphin enjoyment without the hangover. Just a fascinating, fascinating brand and an absolutely great drink. So I thought you might want to hear all about this from the creators. They explain it to so much better than I can. So here's Anthony from Spirited Euphoria, and then Helen joins us a little later into the conversation. My guest is Anthony, who is a director and a master blender of the Endorphin Dealer Institute. And obviously, Anthony, I'm going to start by asking you, what is that? What is the Endorphin Dealer Institute? It's a fabulous name. I love it.
So it's our collection of scientists, marketeers, and business professionals that effectively is about bringing happiness and functional drinks, functional spirits to the market, to just add a kind of another level of interest and complexity to adult non-alcoholic drinking occasions.
I mean, when I first came across this drink, Spirited Euphoria, I just thought, wow, what an interesting idea. Obviously, it doesn't contain any alcohol. So it's, another amazing alternative for people who don't drink. But what you're trying to do is add another layer on top, right? So, okay, we're not having alcohol, but we're adding another layer. Just before we get into that, though, just tell me a little bit about your background, because I always find it really fascinating to get a little bit, to find out a little bit more about the people behind brands. So what's your background?
Yeah, so I'm a kind of food science come flavor technical person. I've been in the innovation industry now for 20 years. I worked a large chunk of my career for Diageo across most of their big brands, Baileys, Gordon's, Smirnoff, and then went effectively on to a liquid innovation specialist, if you like. So bringing new and exciting drinks across both alcoholic, but also more so with consumer pull, non-alcoholic type products. And actually it's rolling over some of those disciplines, which are not soft drinks, but they're actually some of the traditional processes and some of the story, the romance, the ingredients, et cetera, that you would get from adult spirit products, but in a non-alcoholic format, because there is a big, big demand for that coming through the market. The Endorphin Dealer Institute was something that 18 months, probably just over 18 months ago now, I got involved with both Jev and Alexander, the two founders, and then working very closely with Ellen on the project. And we actually formed this collective, which we later penned as the Endorphin Dealer Institute, which started out around how do you add functional effect into products when you're not looking for alcohol. And, there are loads of occasions when that, it's either not relevant to drink alcohol, you actually don't need it at that particular time, or actually you want something else to either lighten your mood, help you to relax, help you to socialize. And actually, there are a wealth of adaptogens, nootropics, ingredients, botanicals that are widely available that can be put together in various guises to deliver all and all of those, or some and all of those things. And I think that became more interesting when we began to look into the space of sort of hemp and then ultimately CBD. Mm. So that's where the Institute, certainly from my perspective, that's where my kind of wedge of the Institute comes from. And it's the continued R&D into, well, what ingredients can we use? How would they go together? How do they work? How do they interact together to give you something that's greater than the sum of the parts? Mm. And then what role does the whole hemp plant, including CBD, have in that whole development piece? And what really interesting things can you get that result in, you know, that combination? And I think that was the birth of kind of Spirited Euphoria.
Yeah, I mean, I find it fascinating because obviously, you know, most of the people listening to this will be choosing not to drink alcohol. So, you know, they've gone through that long process in some cases of you know, retraining their mind, their mindset, you know, so that they no longer drink alcohol. But they often still want a nice drink, right? You know, they still want a grown-up drink, of course. We don't want Coke or orange juice. We're not 12, you know, so we want a nice drink. And one of the questions people, you know, sometimes say to me is, but, you know, what if I just want to feel... You know, I want that chilled feeling. I want that sort of euphoric feeling that alcohol gave me, albeit for a short time before it kind of, you know, came back and bit you on the bum. But initially, that buzz, how do I kind of get that buzz when I'm not drinking? And that's obviously the space you're in. And you know, it's interesting. We were talking before I pressed record, you know, about the fact that some alcohol-free drinks are, you know, effectively water with flavor or with some botanicals. And what you're doing is really going several steps further and adding in these ingredients that will have this functional effect. You know, hopefully I've got that right. So you know, for anyone who's not quite sure what we're talking about here, then what, you know, we'll talk about the hemp in a minute. What are adaptogens? You know, I think of them as kind of natural herbs and roots. What do adaptogens mean when it comes to your drink? And tell us about nootropics, because again, my understanding of that is sort of certain supplements. So tell us about those first, and then I'll be fascinated to know more about the hemp side of it.
Okay, so the two, the split, you're exactly right. So the adaptogens, first of all, are things that have a positive effect on your physical body. And that is, you are right, tend to be botanicals and roots, all 100% natural, and there are thousands of different, whether it be grass or, you know, junipers or tea extracts, etc. They're all things that are known to have a positive effect on your body. If you put antioxidants into the body, it can kind of help mop up free radicals. If you put tannins in the body, it can help change some of the osmotic potential of cells, etc. There are things that you have used, and we historically have used over hundreds and hundreds of years. There's a whole Chinese medicine industry that exists that's grown up over hundreds of years, looking at refining these adaptogen blends and looking at the known functional properties and how they impact the body. And so what essentially we were looking at is what natural ingredients, both nootropics and adaptogens, that can work in combination with each other, that can start to give you all of these improvements. For instance, you know, ginseng, absolutely known to aid memory and make sure that you're storing really good experiences away that kind of make you feel good, release serotonin and actually make you feel good. Some of the B vitamins, they're very, very well known as helping you to produce more energy, helping you to kind of feel a bit more alert, helping your brain to focus on the moment that you're in, etc. So you're, by picking these things and understanding at what level they need to be ingested in the drink and how that works, and then how they work in combination with people's bodies. I think the other thing is everybody's different. We've all got our own kind of makeup and our own blueprint. And so this product affects everybody slightly differently. And I think, you know, being very honest, some people will say, wow, it's a kind of absolutely chalk and cheese effect. Other people are saying it feels much more subtle, but actually it felt sort of a bit more holistic, part of my well-being piece. But actually what we're saying to consumers and to anyone is both CBD, nootropics and adaptogens are not necessarily just a one-shot exercise. And, you know, if you drink alcohol, you have two or three, you can always feel it. They work on an overall more holistic message. So it's actually about more frequent and regular consumption over a period of time that causes these better for you feelings or this kind of ongoing benefit to really kind of take hold and become part of your repertoire.
I mean, I find this fascinating because a lot of the work that I do with, I do sort of grey area drinking coaching. And one of the things we always do is have a look at people's, the brain chemistry piece and how balanced or otherwise people are. And it's almost always the case that when people stop drinking, if they've been drinking for years and they quit the booze, they'll be really out of whack with the serotonin, the dopamine, the GABA. They'll be really out of balance. And of course, we can, you know, absolutely, as you say, we can put these feel good, if you like, chemicals, these mood boosting chemicals back through good nutrition, you know, and supplements. So I find this really fascinating that you're adding this in with a drink, and presumably there are no sort of harmful side effects to this. There are no contraindications that we need to be concerned about.
No, I mean, everything that we have been doing, we've been working with both the FSA and also the MHRA to just understand that, yeah, this is not a medicine, that there are no, we've done absorption and metabolism studies, et cetera, to understand. We understand all the things around RDAs and what we should and shouldn't be using and how these things work together to give you the benefit. You know, there's, as you just said, there are a huge, huge number of benefits in ingesting some of these things, even as precursors to some of those basic chemical functions that happen in your body each and every day. And actually, you know, a little dopamine release from little rewards you give yourself, etc., are important. But actually, if you can put some precursors in with that, again, you can get to a more balanced and a more holistic effect. It isn't effectively trying to kind of push it or overemphasize it or cause something to happen that wouldn't normally happen. This is about bringing your body into homeostasis and getting that balance and that kind of feel good factor and that kind of ongoing better for you feeling and result. But we're doing it through a drink to allow you to get into occasions where you want to socialize. And actually that socialization doesn't need to only operate around alcohol. I'm not anti-alcohol at all, far from it. A lot of my career has been in alcohol, but actually there are a lot of people that want good alternatives, and actually there are now, the science is reaching a point where we can give some really credible and really good alternatives.
Absolutely. And let's talk about the hemp piece. And I mean, of course, we all know that CBD products, I mean, are everywhere now, you know, from beauty through food, you know, everything seems to have CBD in it on one level or another. Just for anyone who's not up to speed on that, just explain to us, you know, what it is, how it works, and just explain this piece that I guess I'm right in saying that you know, the it's not psychoactive. It's not going to get you high, as it were. It's all fully legal, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think to just sort of start at the beginning, so the hemp is the plant. It's been around, you know, 14th century, there's been conversations around hemp, and hemp has been used in a whole bunch of things, textiles, etc., very widely. But more and more and more now, we're beginning to see that migration into health and beauty products, into food products, into drinks as well. So essentially what we looked at was to take the hemp plant and then actually start to isolate it and distill it to break it down into all of its constituent parts. So number one, the psychoactive piece is THC. Mm-hmm. So that is removed. That's actually working with the FSA and working with the EFSA and also the FDA in the States. It's very well regulated what you can and can't do with that. Anything over a trace amount, which is trace at analytical level to 5 decimal places, is classified as a controlled substance and actually is the piece which is illegal, effectively. Right. Some states in America, absolutely, you're allowed to do that, but overall, that is illegal. So that's been taken away. You then break hemp down into a bunch of different things. So the terpenes, which are effectively all of the flavor or flavonoids or flavor chemicals, natural flavor chemicals that come from hemp themselves, and they could be likened to a whole flavor ingredient wheel of profiles. So citrus style notes and green botanical notes and tea notes and dark woody notes, but they all come from the hemp plant. Imagine breaking it down into 1,000,006 different particles that you can smell and taste and touch. So that's that piece of it. The other isolated pieces are CBD itself, and CBD is the other functional part of the plant, which allows for you to feel relaxation. It's good for healing. It's known to help boost mood, and it's known over a longer period of time to be a very good, better for you component. It can help with anxiety, can kind of help you to feel kind of, you know, more serotonin, cause some other internal processes. So where CBD is at the moment, CBD is recognized as a novel food through the FSA, and we've been working very, very closely with them to make all of the necessary novel food applications and put together all of the certifications and analytical methodology, etc., to ensure that that product remains compliant. And that's a process that we're going through at the moment to ensure that we're very well validated and that we're doing everything exactly as the industry wants to kind of roll this out. And so we feel like we're really leading the charge. We've paired ourselves with a very well-known pharmaceutical company where we buy in an incredibly purified version of our hemp, and that's where we do all of our splitting into terpenes, CBDs, etc. And we have very, very good certification, and we have a traceability. So we have our seed to sip certification, which we've put through, which allows us to track all the way from the plant and the grower, all the way through to the numbered bottle that you end up with on the shelf. We know exactly what's in that product. We know exactly where it's come from, and we know exactly how its life stage, etc., when we were using it. So we're doing things in what we believe to be the best and most compliant and safe way. The purpose being is to bring the best experience to consumers, and also to educate them on the fact that you don't need to be scared of this, because I think that's the problem with CBD and hemp. People are not really sure, and so actually you sort of go, oh, maybe it's in a health food store, or maybe it's whatever. This is about migrating it into mass market so that people can enjoy all of the benefits that it's got to offer as a brand new botanical ingredient. Essentially, it's not brand new. We're just bringing back some of the old traditional processes that were used back in the 14th century and just strengthening that now for a modern era with some much more interesting flavor chemistry.
Sure. Welcome, Helena, as well, from the brand. Lovely to join us. And Helen, what about the contraindications? I know you don't recommend it for pregnant women. Is there anybody else, you know, that shouldn't have this?
Well, I think if you're on certain medications, then you need to double check that with your doctor. And obviously, if you're pregnant, because there are sort of natural nootropics and CBD in it. And so we can't sort of prescribe what the effect could be if it's combined with certain medications. But generally speaking, everybody can consume this. And obviously, we follow the guidelines that are set out by the FSA in terms of daily consumption and amount that you can consume in a sitting. I think that's the wonderful thing, is that actually largely everybody can consume it, unless, of course, you're pregnant or on medication.
And what's your hope for this product for the future then, Helen? What are you hoping? I mean, I know, I'm guessing over the last, you know, however many months with lockdown, you know, lots of people have been buying this to have at home. Would you like to see it out there in the bars?
Sure. Bars are definitely part of the strategy. I mean, the longer term vision, if I have to be honest, is to create a new category of feel good drinks. So it really is a new category. We're not non-alcoholic, although I think a lot of people will classify us non-alcoholic because that's the kind of easy place to put us. But we're offering something completely distinctive to the market, which is functional non-alcoholic. And so our vision is to create a range of interesting products which play to different occasions and different effects because of using different natural ingredients. And that is giving people new choices, which I think don't exist in the social landscape at the moment. And I suppose evolve socializing to a future whereby it's more inclusive and people can partake in a way that doesn't affect the rest of their lives as much as perhaps drinking does do. So that's really the ambition. And, you know, we are working on a second variant. I can't say too much about it, but we are working on a second variant, which will lean into a different occasion and a different set of functional ingredients, because we're trying to tie occasion to effect. And that's where we'll carry on going, right? Is exploring and playing around with new novel ingredients that have different effects, and blend them together in a way that we are leaving people with a feeling that is really good and right for the occasion that they're in.
Mm. Great, thank you. Just want to give us your website then, guys.
It's www.eddiespirits.com.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. It's fantastic. It's so unique, and I think people are just absolutely gonna love it. So thank you so much for taking the time to chat to me today.
Thank you very much.
So don't forget, we've got a great opportunity to enter our competition to win some Spirited Euphoria. So just go to thesoberclub.com and check the show notes as well to have a go and to entering that competition. And as promised, the lovely William Porter, author of Alcohol Explained.
I'm so pleased to be chatting again to William Porter, author of Alcohol Explained and Alcohol Explained 2. William, thanks so much for agreeing to chat to me, particularly about this very tricky topic of post-lockdown anxiety. I'm guessing you've heard about it from certain people, yeah?
Oh, yes, absolutely, yes.
It's a thing, isn't it? And I don't know, you know, I'm sure there's a few things we can cover in this kind of chat, but I suppose one of the things that I've come across is people who, well, I think there's a few different groups of people. There are those who got sober during lockdown. So, and which, by the way, if you did, absolute hats off to you, you know, never a better time than to, you know, really kickstart for lockdown, you know, which has been pretty hideous, to be the catalyst for something amazing. So if you manage to do that, absolutely big yourself up. It's brilliant. But of course, if someone did stop drinking during lockdown, then they have been in a sort of protective bubble in the actual true sense of the word, and they haven't ventured out, you know, into social living. So there's that kind of group of people, which I'd like to talk about. But then there are other people who have perhaps been sober for ages. So it's not necessarily so much the shall I, shan't I drink when I get to the pub question. It's more a thing of they're a little bit nervous of change, actually, because lockdown has been so bizarre for so many people. And then I think there's another group of people who are just suffering from a kind of anxiety and just inertia, really. So anyways, there's quite a lot for us to talk about there. Let's start initially by just a quick introduction to you for anyone who hasn't come across your amazing work. Just give us a short history and you know, just tell us about the work that you do.
Yeah, sure. So So Alcohol Explained is the book. I started drinking and smoking when I was about 14. And I ended up stopping in my late 30s. So I was drinking for sort of 25 years or so. And I found it sort of escalated and I was drinking more and more. I've got a long story short, really, because I don't want to talk about too much about my backstory. But what I kind of struggled with was the fact that a lot of people didn't really understand why they were drinking. And for me, it always felt like there was a reason. Mm. And it felt like it was something that we should be able to understand. A lot of people almost chalk drinking and addiction up as to just sort of like, you just have to accept that you can't understand it. I could never really accept that. Mm. So I stopped smoking eventually using Alan Carr's method. And I was really impressed with his sort of pragmatic, analytical approach to it. And I guess inadvertently, I took kind of a similar approach to drinking. And that is what ended up being Alcohol Explained, kind of like my understanding of an explanation as to why we drink, what it does to us and what it doesn't do for us.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so great about the book. And thank you for contributing to mine, by the way. I really appreciate it because, you know, your approach is, as you say, you know, you're taking the very logical approach. So it's not so much the kind of fluff. This is exactly how it is. So that's a good place to start then. Let's just discuss again, for anyone who's brand new to this, you know, this is fascinating. And if you aren't brand new, if you've been around the houses and you've been sober for years, I think it's still really good to hear this again. I actually love, you know, hearing people like William explain this, because I can never get enough of hearing that explanation, because for so many years, I didn't understand what alcohol was. You know, I just didn't. I thought it was me. There was something wrong with me. So can you just explain to us, William, then, what alcohol does to us? Because a lot of us don't even realise that it is a depressant.
Yes, it is. Yeah. So it's a chemical depressant. It's a sedative. So what I mean by that is something that inhibits or depresses nerve activity. Now, the problem with that is, so I think most people are kind of on board with that. That's why you feel slightly more relaxed when you've had a drink, because it's anaesthetizing, it's inhibiting nerve activity and calming things down. But the problem is the brain is reactive, and it reacts to the world around us, and it reacts to drugs that we put inside ourselves. The way it reacts to alcohol is very, very complicated, but we don't really need to go too much in the science to a huge degree. But essentially, your brain creates and excretes a whole myriad of different chemicals, drugs and hormones. A lot of them you would have heard about, like adrenaline and cortisol and endorphins. These are all chemicals that your brain creates and excretes. Now, what the brain does, it tries to work on something called homeostasis, which just means a delicate chemical balance. Mm. So when everything's working well, you've got this nice chemical balance. Now, when you introduce something like alcohol, which is a sedative, your brain reacts to it. It reacts to it in lots and lots of different ways. But what it really amounts to is that it becomes hypersensitive, so it can work under the sedating effects of the alcohol. Now, as the years go by, your brain becomes increasingly proficient at doing this. And the results are that you can drink more and more, because your brain's able to react more and more to the alcohol. Now, where the problem comes in is a few hours after your last drink, the alcohol starts to wear off, and your brain is then left in this oversensitization phase. So one way I sometimes describe it, imagine if you're driving along in a vehicle and you're trying to maintain, say, for example, a 30 mile an hour speed. If you hit a load of mud or water or something like swampy ground, the vehicle is going to slow down. Mm. So you have to push the accelerator down harder to get the vehicle to 30 miles an hour. Now, when you come out of that, you're going to fly on ahead. Mm. And that's essentially what happens with alcohol. When the relaxing effect wears off, there's a corresponding feeling of anxiety. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And that's absolutely the case for alcohol. So firstly, the thing to understand is when the alcohol wears off, there's a corresponding feeling of anxiety. The second thing, that as the years go by and your brain becomes increasingly proficient at countering the alcohol, the effects are, one, that you can drink more, two, that you need to drink more to get the same effect, but three, the withdrawal, the after effect, that oversensitization gets progressively worse as time goes by.
Mm. What's really interesting, though, is that, you know, alcohol is a sedative, as you say, and yet we also think of it as a stimulant, as an exciter. You know, we say, oh, I've got something really important coming up, I'll have a drink, or we drink to celebrate. So we don't think of it as a chill out aid necessarily, do we? Well, not always, anyway.
Yeah, it's quite, I don't know if you've read the old P.G. Woodhouse books, but he quite often refers to alcohol as like a stimulant, about the stimulating effects of alcohol. The reason for that actually is, if you think about when you're in that oversensitization stage, you're feeling quite anxious, it can stop you sleeping. The quickest way to, there's two ways you can get rid of it. One is just to wait for your brain chemistry to get back to normal. But of course, there's a far quicker way, and that's to have another drink. Mm. Because your brain's geared up, it's going too fast, because it's geared up to work under the sedating effects of the alcohol, but the alcohol's gone, so you feel very anxious. So if you take another drink, it can actually relax you and make you feel much calmer. And obviously that makes you feel better. Mm. The other thing it does, well, I mean, we can talk about how alcohol impacts sleep, but alcohol actually ruins your sleep with the effect that you're increasingly tired. Now, being an anaesthetic, when you drink, it will anaesthetize those feelings of tiredness. So it can actually make you feel less tired. So we start to interpret it as sort of having, as you say, like stimulant effects.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And then just tell us a little bit about what happens when we stop drinking then, you know, because there'll be, you know, there's people listening who are only sort of one, two, three days in or whatever, but then other people who are sort of a couple of weeks. So just remind us what the process is for most people in terms of how the alcohol leaves our body. Because let's face it, for a lot of us, those first few weeks can, you know, they can be feel really tough.
Yeah, they're very unpleasant, those first, particularly the first few days usually. If you're, obviously it depends how much you're drinking, and to go back to what I was talking about before, the more you drink, the more your brain has to react to the alcohol, so that the more anxious you feel afterwards. So what you will find is for the first day or two, you're in the overstimulation phase, which means you feel very anxious. You might find it very difficult to sleep. Now, that's also exacerbated because when you're drinking regularly, so if you don't drink alcohol, towards the end of the day, your brain starts to close things down and you start to feel tired, and eventually you drift off into a natural sleep. Now, when you drink alcohol regularly, your brain stops going through that process because it's just relying on the alcohol to do it. So instead of closing things down itself, it does nothing in the knowledge that there will be alcohol coming in, which is what will work to close things down. So when you stop drinking for the first few nights, you probably find you won't be able to get back to sleep. Mm. And it's very, very difficult to go to sleep. That's partly the oversensitization and partly the fact that your brain has to get used to, once again, closing things down towards the end of the day. And this is one of the things that feeds into this myth that alcohol helps you sleep. It's for really for people when they're drinking regularly and they quit, they find they will sleep very badly for those first few nights.
Mm, well, for some people, it's weeks.
Yeah, well, it will. It can be. Because what happens is you've got that aspect. But of course, if you're drinking quite regularly, your brain is almost constantly in the oversensitization phase. So when you finally stop, and this is what a lot of people will find, the first 3, 4, 5 days, they find it very difficult to sleep. After that, what they often find is they're exhausted. They're really drained all the time. They can sleep hours and hours at night and then they want to nap during the day. The reason for that is, as I say, when you're drinking regularly, your brain is almost constantly in the oversensitization phase. And when you stop, for the first time in however long you've been drinking for, it starts to go back to normal. And it's the equivalent as if you were drinking, say, 8 or 9 cups of strong coffee every day and then you suddenly cut it out. Mm. You go through a period. So you almost go the other way. You go from not being able to sleep to just being wanting to sleep all the time, feeling really tired and lethargic.
Yeah. What can we do in those early days then, for anyone who is in the early days or even early weeks? Is there anything we can do to help with that? I mean, I always, you know, talk about the fact that, you know, we do need to put back, help balance this brain chemistry through really good food. So good nutrition is really important. Do you have any other tips with regard to sleep for those early weeks?
Yeah, so the big one I would recommend is exercise. And it depends on what level you're at. But what you need to remember is if you're very unfit, exercise can just be a walk for 15, 20 minutes, whatever you can manage. Mm. What you're really looking to do is any kind of exercise. Firstly, your brain releases endorphins, which makes you feel good. So you may be feeling awful in those first few days, but you will never feel worse for doing a bit of exercise. Mm. And of course, if you exercise, particularly if you can do it earlier in the day, you increase your chances of being able to sleep properly at nighttime.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, so that's a good introduction for anyone who hasn't, you know, already read your books about, you know, what alcohol does to us. And I think it's just really important to stress this, this link between alcohol and anxiety. Now, for many people, just because they have quit the booze doesn't necessarily mean that they don't still have some anxiety going on, because, you know, it can take a long time for the brain chemistry to all kind of recalibrate. And also, it may well be that the alcohol has been masking stuff that's been there all along. Have you come across that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a number of ways it can come out. If you're lucky, you quit alcohol, and that was the main problem. Not to say that you don't have problems and you don't have anxiety, because it's human life. And, you know, we have ups and downs, we have problems. But yes, for other people, they can quit and find actually there is an underlying issue. It can be, like a specific mental health issue or some kind of personal problem that they just haven't really got to grips with.
Mm. And the alcohol's been masking it for years.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So lockdown then, what in your view, what's been going on, do you think, for people, people who stopped drinking during lockdown? What do you think is going to be the most difficult aspects now as things start to open up a little bit more?
I think probably you hit the nail on the head exactly, which is socialising, because that's the big thing. I think for most people, alcohol and the times they perceive to be the most difficult are socialising, going out on social events without drinking. Now, of course, bar some fairly small time periods in the UK, we haven't really been socialising for over a year. So I think that's the thing. It's almost like you said, people are almost in like this protected bubble where they've stopped.
Mm.
But really, for a lot of people, the true test of drinking is to be socialising, and I suppose to another degree, holidays. So we've got both of these things now on the horizon, where you could have stopped for anything up to a year, but you may not feel that you've actually had your sobriety fully tested because you've not, for example, done a holiday or been out on a social event.
Yeah. And of course, the other thing to say is, although, I did start by saying, if you've stopped drinking during lockdown, well done to you. That's amazing. But of course, in some ways, it's been a very difficult time to stop, because you may not have experienced the benefits quite the same way that you may have done because of all the anxiety. So, people sometimes say they feel they've stopped drinking, but they still feel extremely anxious. Now, it's interesting, because sometimes people almost say, oh, I'm not, as you said, I'm not sleeping well. I was better off when I was drinking. I feel anxious. I was better off when I was drinking. Now, of course, that's not the case. So how do we kind of encourage people to recognize that, trust us, things would have been a lot worse if you carried on with the booze?
Yeah, I think you've only got to look at the statistics. People who drink in lockdown, people have been drinking more. Okay, and when you drink more, as mentioned, your anxiety goes up, your sleep gets worse, your energy levels go down. So absolutely guarantee, however bad things are, they would be an awful lot worse if you were drinking.
Yeah.
And do bear in mind, it is a strange time and it has taken its toll on people. And I think it's easy to underestimate the effect it's actually had on us.
Yeah.
Because generally I'm quite introverted. I don't particularly like social functions ever. And to begin with, it was almost like, well, I don't mind this, because I was one of the lucky people who job translated perfectly well to home working.
Yeah, yeah.
So all I really did, I was doing exactly the same thing every day, only instead of commuting into the City of London, I was just working from home, which was lovely. But I think even for me, a year down the line, being stuck in the same environment all the time, it does have an effect. And I would say, don't underestimate the effect it has had on you.
Absolutely.
A substantial amount of whatever you're feeling negatively at the moment is probably due to just being, stuck in this fairly unnatural environment we've been in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a time to just be absolutely super kind to yourself, because, it really has been tough for a lot of people. We need human connection, for God's sake. We really do. And then, of course, there'll be people who, have stopped drinking relatively recently. So they really are, as you say, they're nervous about this socialising piece, about what they're going to say to other people. They maybe haven't quite found their sober voice yet. They haven't quite stepped into that identity of a non-drinker yet. So it can be really tough. What's your best suggestions as to how we can approach that?
There's a few, funny enough, I went out for work drinks a week or so. In fact, it was last week.
And sat in a freezing pub garden.
It was the day it thundered lightning.
Nice.
It was pouring down. Fortunately, we had a cover. So I went into central London for this. And I'm not sure that this is true for everyone, but I found it massively beneficial, because you have to book in advance. Mm. A lot of places, they're maximum 3-hour slots. Which makes it really useful, particularly if it's your first time. You're limited to a 3-hour period, so it was quite pleasant. So I sort of went there, had a few alcohol-free beers, and then I think we got there at 3, so it finished at 6, so it was quite a manageable chunk. So you might well find, if you are socialising, because of the way things are at the moment, you're actually sort of time limited, which is quite useful.
So that's a good tip, is even if it's not time limited, put a time limit on it yourself. I always say, you know, make sure if you're driving, obviously that's always great, in which case make sure that there's something you've got to get back for, or something that you've got going on the very next morning, that you book yourself into something the next morning, even if it's only a walk with a friend or a class at the gym or whatever it might be, so that you've got that marker, as it were. And if you're not driving, then book your taxi or whatever it is, you know, or book your lift home earlier than you normally would, because there's no doubt about it, when we're not drinking, we do get bored quicker, don't you think?
Yeah, I think you can socialize for a long time with other people who aren't drinking, because I found this the other day, 3 hours was about right, because I was chatting to people, it was quite enjoyable, but after 3 hours people were starting to
repeat themselves.
Yeah, and it was starting to get a bit irritating. And I don't have a huge amount of patience with people when they're drinking, to be honest.
And I also think, you know, it's really important to prep ahead in terms of exactly what you're going to drink. So, you know, as you said, if you drink alcohol-free beer, you're pretty much quids in anywhere in the UK, you can get that. But if you don't drink alcohol-free beer, you really have got to kind of ring the venue or prep ahead as to exactly what you're going to drink. Because if you don't, you arrive at wherever it is, and then, you know, said friend or colleague just sort of hands you a wine or whatever it is you used to drink. And then you're straight into that, oh, you know, well, actually, I'm not drinking, or, oh, you know, and it's always awkward. And then it's like, oh, well, go on, just have one. And then before you know it, you're into, you know, breaking your own choice and your own decision. Whereas if you've prepped ahead, you know exactly what you're going to be drinking. And I always say to people, if the bar or the venue that you're going to doesn't have really decent, good, grown-up alcohol-free drinks, then take your own, because nobody really wants to sit there nursing an orange juice, do they?
No, exactly. But funny enough, that's exactly what I did. I checked online, because often these days they will have even drinks menus on there.
Yeah, that's true.
But there was nothing there, so I just rang through and said, what have you got? Because I think as well, that makes it easier, rather than going there and just playing it by ear. Having a plan in place does actually take a lot of the stress out of it. For example, I'm going to get there, and when they come around and ask what I'm drinking, I'm going to say, you know, my alcohol-free Peroni or whatever it might be, or a lemonade or a Coke. So get it in your mind what you will have, because following a sort of a script is always much easier than sort of
definitely action. And also, in what excuses or what reasons you're going to give when people ask you, again, if you're new to all of this and you've, you know, the first few times, it that can be the thing that stops people doing this, or that literally stops people from choosing to ditch the booze, is that they're so terrified of what others are going to think of them. Now the reality, and I know it's easy for me to say now, but the reality is people don't care that much. You know, right. We think they do, but they don't. You know, often we get an initial kind of, you know, what? You know, you're not drinking, you know, you're nuts or whatever it might be. But often after the initial kind of surprise, once people have had their own drink, they don't care so much whether you're drinking or not, actually. So you just have to be prepped as to what you're going to say. So what are your favourite reasons or excuses that you've heard?
My personal favourite is, I just don't fancy it.
Yeah.
Because what I've found is you can get sucked in to these ridiculous, you know, so say, I don't know, I'm on antibiotics. Oh, you can just have
I'm pregnant.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think that'll work for me.
Well, it worked for me either.
Yeah.
But,
you know, like, you can tie yourself in knots with the lies.
Yeah, yeah. Or you know, like, I'm going for a run in the morning, or I'm driving, people say, leave, you know, there's always a way around it. But if you just say, I just don't fancy drinking.
Yeah. Or if you say, I feel so much better without it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't want to. And most of the time people just accept that. Now, when I'm with work colleagues, I don't always have a full conversation about why I'm not drinking. So it's a kind of a shortened kind of one-sided view. And I just say, do you know, I stopped years ago when the kids were little, because I was finding it tiring as it was. And I found I wasn't sleeping well with alcohol. And then I just found that I just didn't really enjoy it anymore.
Yeah, and fantastic. And I tell you what, nobody can argue with that. No, exactly. When you say it like that, it's so authentic and honest. Nobody can argue with it. Might not be true for them, but no one can argue that it's true for you. So, yes. You know, I think sometimes we wrap ourselves up in knots with all of these excuses. But actually, when you just state the truth without going into too much detail, it usually does the trick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just interesting. Now, what else would you, do you have any other pointers, anything else that you would recommend for those people who are new to the socializing sober piece?
Yeah, I think, again, going back to the brain chemistry, I think is quite a useful one, because endorphins, your brain releases endorphins, and they're one of the things that when it's released, you feel really good.
Mm.
Now, we get endorphins when we eat, when we exercise, we get endorphins when we socialise.
Mm.
So what will normally happen, but the problem is we don't get endorphins the second we start socialising. What normally happens is, you know, we go to a social event, we're slightly nervous, slightly self-conscious, and we get into a conversation, and hopefully if it's an interesting conversation, we start to feel less nervous, less self-conscious. And when we relax into it, our brain starts to release endorphins and then we start to feel good. Now, one of the reasons we associate alcohol with having a good time and a stimulating effect is because when we start drinking, we usually start drinking at social occasions. Now, it can have a direct impact on endorphins, because if you turn up somewhere, so your brain will release endorphins if you are relaxed and happy and socializing. Now, when you turn up at a social event, you're not relaxed and happy to begin with. You're slightly nervous.
Mm.
Now, alcohol being an anesthetic, a sedative, it will sedate those feelings of nervousness, which can then let the endorphins flow. So what we usually associate with the good feeling of alcohol isn't actually alcohol at all. It's actually an endorphin thing.
It's actually the good company or the fact you're having a nice conversation. Yeah.
Precisely. So I think understanding that you can and will enjoy yourself without alcohol is quite important.
Mm.
It's also worth mentioning, I think, as well, the problem with this aspect of it is, so when you're socializing and drinking, you're experiencing this kind of mix between alcohol and endorphins, and it feels very good. Now, what will often happen with is, say you go out on a social event and you're trying to stop, or you're driving, or whatever the reason is, you're not drinking. Often we go to these events thinking, oh, I can't drink, I'm not really going to enjoy it. Mm. And surprise, surprise, you don't get the endorphin rush.
Yeah.
You're not relaxed, you're not happy, you're almost just counting the time down until you can go out on another occasion when you're able to drink. So this kind of feeds into this myth that you need alcohol to enjoy social occasions.
Yeah.
So I would just emphasize that just try and relax into the event. This is why I think a time period is very useful, because you can almost look at it like a scientific experiment. Like, you know what, I'm going to go see how I go. No matter how bad it is, I just have to put up with it for a couple of hours and I'll leave.
Mm.
Invariably, you will find it's actually a lot more enjoyable than you think.
Yeah. And of course, I would add to that, you could also, you know, visualize it being fantastic, right? You can literally, because that would you change your mindset and you actually visualize yourself having a really fun time, drinking whatever alcohol-free drink you've chosen, and visualize yourself leaving the event saying, that was great, I feel fantastic, and, you know, waking up refreshed the next morning. So yeah, you're right. The mindset really is everything. So what about for those people then who actually sort of going out to a social event for the first time, not drinking isn't the main issue? Perhaps they've been sober for a year, 2 years, whatever, but they are feeling anxious literally because of what's been going on for, you know, however long. There's just a general kind of anxiety. Do you have any tips for people who are feeling like that?
Yeah, I would say just remember that humans generally fear change. We like routine, it's safe for us. So it's perfectly natural to be worried that things are changing. You know, it was kind of odd when it's almost a strange thing, because everyone was all in a panic when we went into lockdown, and now everyone's in a panic coming out of it. But just remember that any kind of change causes stress and causes us to be fearful. But a lot of the time we're kind of fearing something that is not going to happen. There's nothing there. All we're going to be doing, for most of us, I mean, for me personally, I will be returning to what I was doing you know, a year and a half ago, and have been doing every day for a decade prior to that. Mm. So it may feel very strange and very unnerving, but actually what it is going back to normal life. And I would say, you know, it's almost like people who, you know, become very injured, they're stuck at home and they eventually become fearful of leaving the house or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. There is a little bit of that going on, I think, for some people. There's no doubt about it. Everyone's world has got smaller.
It has.
I mean, everyone, unless maybe you run Amazon or something, you know, everything has gotten smaller.
Yeah. And I think it is, it's not a natural way to be.
No.
So even if you feel that you're very introverted, I think people, everyone, and going back to what I said before, don't underestimate how difficult and the drain it will have had on you.
Yeah.
And try and bear in mind that as lockdown releases, I think for most people, things will get better. It may be nerve-wracking, but doing nerve-wracking things aren't always bad things in the long run. They quite often make us feel better in the long run.
Mm. And I suppose that follows through for the people who have just got a sense of, I can't be asked, you know. I think for a lot of people, there really is that thing of, well, for so long, I haven't really had to bother to get dressed. I mean, literally, I don't know if I can remember how to actually properly, you know, I mean, really, like, put an outfit together. How do you even do that? You know, most of us have only had to wear tops on Zoom for the last year, apart from, you know, putting your kind of loungewear on to go to the supermarket, for God's sake. I mean, seriously, there's so much of kind of, it takes a lot of energy to do all of that stuff. And I think a lot of people have lost some energy levels. They've lost their mojo. I mean, I've had a sense of this, and for me to be like that is just bizarre, because, you know, I'm a Duracell bunny, but I've got a bit of that going on, you know, a little bit of that, oh, can I be asked, you know. And I know people, there are some people really, you know, they're fearful that there's something wrong with them because they just haven't got that energy, that zest. And so they're thinking, oh my God, is there something really wrong with me?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I think that the thing to bear in mind as well with it, see, I've been fairly good at going out. So I've been going out running, going out for walks, going out cycling. But I think the other thing to bear in mind is it's limited what you can do. Mm. So, you know, for the first month or so, that was fine. But now I have literally been everywhere I can walk, run or cycle to. And it's just the same old routine over and over again. And I quite often find if I'm stuck at home all day, by the end of the day, you kind of feel a bit, you know, it's just draining just looking at the same four walls. And I'm kind of feeling the same with the local area now as well. Mm. What I would say is it is fearful, and it will feel like you have to put a lot of energy in, but it not only takes energy, but it also energizes.
Well, that's true. When you actually do it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm sure people will feel better for it when they start doing it.
And I think also, you know, as you say, it's that the fact that so much of what we've all had going on has been a sameness to everything. You know, as you say, same four walls, same route, same exercise, same food, you know. So I think just by perhaps pushing ourselves out of our comfort zone a tiny bit and just doing something that's a bit different, even if it's not massive, just something a bit different when we can. Well, as you say, it will take some energy, but that's such a good point. It will also energize us. And when we've done that and taken a completely different route or done a completely different type of exercise or gone to a restaurant or whatever, we will start to get that joy back, hopefully.
Hopefully.
We can only hope, can't we? What else can we share, William, that might be helpful, do you think, for people in this kind of, with this kind of stress, these stress levels going on? Do you have any other advice generally for people who feel, you know, just really feeling that sort of underlying stress and anxiety right now?
Well, I would probably just emphasise that we are going back to something we've done previously. Mm. So this isn't entirely new. And I think certainly for me, thinking back to how I was a year and a half ago, it didn't, you know, getting up and putting a suit on and going to the office didn't feel like hard work or effort. Mm. It's purely because we're not used to it. It's doing something different. It's that change in routine. It's almost like that saying, you know, you have nothing to fear but fear itself. It's the idea of it and not the reality of it that's going to be a problem. Mm. I mean, in a way, it was good for me going out for those work drinks. It would have been so easy to say, sorry, I can't make it. But I kind of think if these opportunities come up, it's probably worth, if you can manage it, doing it, because you will feel better for it.
Yeah.
And also it kind of, it gives you those baby steps to getting back to where things will probably hopefully end up in a few months' time anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing you can do is just sort of, you know, pop out somewhere slightly different. Yeah. So the other day we went to a shop in central London just to, you know, get out and go on a tube. And something like that can be quite empowering because you're, you know, you're doing something different. You're going out of where you normally are. You've got to put some, maybe some different clothes on to do it. And it just gives you that little taster without necessarily having to, you know, go back to an office or go and meet friends at the pub or something like that.
I think it's really helpful to talk about this. I appreciate that because, you know, I think there probably will be people thinking, oh my goodness, it's just me. I'm the only person who's actually fearful of getting on a train. What's wrong with me? You know, but actually I think it's really common to be suffering some kind of stress and anxiety over, as you say, this, you know, change. It's another massive change, isn't it? Even if it is going back to what we used to know in some ways.
Yeah, I spoke to someone the other day who had gone into the office for the first time in however long and had a full-on panic attack and had to just sit down. So don't, whatever else you do, don't think it's unusual or it's just you. It's completely normal. Everyone is suffering it to a greater or lesser degree.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also good, you know, that you reminded us that the way, you know, sort of stress and anxiety works in the sense that we, you know, we get go into kind of fight or flight or freeze mode, don't we? You know, if we're not careful, you know, sort of stress hits us and what our body thinks is, okay, right, I've got to run because there's a tiger or I've got to fight or I've got to stand still, you know. But actually the reality is that there is no tiger, there is no actual threat. So we need to find a way of, you know, telling our unconscious mind it's okay.
Yeah.
And sometimes just by, you know, standing in the right posture, it can really help that. Just how you align your body just by standing in a power pose. You know, I'm always talking about that, you know, but it makes a massive difference because it sends that message to, you know, the brain, the body rather. You start with the body and it sends the message to the brain. I'm strong, I'm powerful, I'm okay. Which, you know, it's that cybernetic loop. It really helps. The body talks to the brain and vice versa. So sometimes we just have to kind of be brave and almost trick ourselves into remembering that we are safe, we are okay.
Yeah, absolutely. It was funny enough, years ago when I was in the military, you'd see in fearful situations, the officers you always look towards were the ones that were sort of standing up very relaxed, very confident looking. And you kind of learn exactly the same thing. No matter how scared you're feeling, you adopt the same posture.
You model that behavior, that stance.
For it. Yeah, exactly.
Fascinating. Yeah. Any other tips you'd like to share with us, William, for, you know, especially around this link really between alcohol and stress and alcohol and anxiety?
I suppose the final thing I would just emphasise is alcohol kind of provide a sort of a false haven, because don't forget, whatever kind of relief you get from your anxiety, you've then got a corresponding increase at the end of it when it wears off. So it's always a kind of a false economy, drinking. But it does something else in that. So if you are afraid of a situation, for example, you know, me with my work drinks the other day, going out to them and facing it, when you have a fearful situation, the way to dispel the fear is to face it and to go through with it, because it's not going to kill you. You will go out the other end, you will come home and you will survive. And then when you've done that, you'll feel slightly more relaxed the next time. And it may take you a few times. Some people do it immediately. Sometimes some people, it takes months and months and constant doing the same situation over and over again, but you will feel slightly better for it. But when you drink, you don't actually deal with that. All you're doing is anaesthetizing it. It's the same for many things. And what another example is grief. So people will lose someone close to them. Now there's a natural grieving process that you go through. It takes time. It can take a long time. Sometimes you may need counselling, but there's a natural progression that you go through, and you may never forget that person. You know, that loss will always be there, but it starts to feel more manageable and you can actually live with it. When you drink, because you're just anaesthetizing, you don't go through that breathing process. It's the same with anxiety. It's the same as facing up to difficult situations. Not only is the relief short-lived and then you have a corresponding feeling of anxiety afterwards anyway, but you're never actually getting to grips with learning to overcome that anxiety.
Mm. It's fascinating, really, because, you know, for so many of us, that went on for years. Mm. I mean, literally, you know, some people have had 30, 40 years of being in that pretty much constant state of not actually being who they really are. Mm. You know, this is why I sometimes talk about this, you know, well, as Catherine Gray puts it so beautifully, you know, this unexpected joy that comes from being sober, this feeling of, oh my God, what is that feeling? Oh, wow, that's happiness. I never knew what that was. Like contentment, you know, what the hell is even that, you know? Because we've numbed everything out for so many goddamn years. It's incredible, really. Anyways, one last question. There are sometimes people feel that they, you know, that months, potentially years into being sober, they feel as though everything kind of comes crashing down around them again. And we hear about PAWS, you know, this post-acute withdrawal symptoms. Tell us what you know about that.
Yeah, it's very vague. So what I would say about PAWS is it's very vague. It's not that easily documented. And what I would just mention, which is another issue, so when we quit drinking, lots and lots of good things happen to us. Our brain chemistry gets back to normal. We start getting proper quality sleep. Our heart rate goes down. Alcohol accelerates your heart rate. And when your heart rate goes up, your body is telling you, sit down and rest. It's a fail-safe mechanism to stop your heart going too fast. So when people drink alcohol and accelerate their heart rate, they feel very lethargic all the time. So when we quit drinking, we do have these massive benefits. You know, we feel more mentally resilient as our brain chemistry gets back to normal. We've got more energy. We sleep better, so we wake up feeling much more refreshed. And that's what sometimes, I think sometimes people refer to it as the pink cloud. It's almost like this.
The euphoria.
Exactly. I think the problem is you need to remember that we are human beings and we tend to eventually take things for granted. So, you know, you start to end up in a situation where, you know, feeling energetic and resilient and much, much better all the time becomes the new normal. Mm. But the problem is at the same time, life is going on, and yes, quitting alcohol makes things a lot better, but we still have problems. Everyone has problems.
Well, that's exactly it, isn't it? It's how do you define whether you could, because I hear this a lot, you know, in the sober club, people will often say, you know, I'm having a terrible day, or I've got a headache, or I feel really bad, or I feel so down, or this or that, you know, and could it be there's something wrong with me? And then, you know, you might say, well, Did you ever have down days when you were drinking? Hell yes. You know, well, it's going to happen, right? Because it's life, isn't it?
And exactly.
But I think we have such high expectations. We think, you know, we literally, and I mean, trust me, being sober brings every bit of magic that, you know, it's possible, but it's still life. So it isn't possible that when we stop drinking, we will never have a shit day. Because unfortunately, life's not like that. We will still have days when we can't be asked and we don't feel great and we've got a headache or we're miserable or irritable or whatever, won't we?
Exactly. I think that's it. Yeah. So it's very hard. But what I would say is everyone in the world, exactly as you say, have bad days. And it's not always, you know, I've had an argument with someone or something bad happened at work or there's, you know, this bill that I can't pay or whatever it is. A lot of the time, a bad day just is, you just don't feel right one day. You know, you're just unhappy, you're depressed, you're angry, whatever. And that, I think, is just human life. Mm. And I think there is a tendency with people who have drunk a lot and then stopped. It's almost they're constantly referring everything back to, is this a result of drinking or not drinking?
Yes,
whereas exactly. Actually, sometimes it isn't. It's just you've stopped drinking, that's done with. Mm. And then you get on with life, but life does have its ups and downs.
Yeah, that's a really good point. William, thank you so much. I really appreciate you sharing this with us. Just a reminder then for anyone who hasn't got your book yet, just a reminder where they can get hold of your book and find out more about your work. And just give us your website again.
It's alcoholexplained.com.
We've got some copies of Alcohol Explained to give away and one of the workbooks as well that go with it. So if you check the show notes, I'll give you a link through to my other website, imperfectlynatural.com, where I've got a bunch of competitions. You may as well enter and have a go. And also please vote for William Porter in my Platinum Awards. I host the Platinum Awards every year for natural products and services. And obviously I've got a category this year for alcohol-free drinks, but also for authors of wellbeing books generally. And William's book is in there. So if you've got the time, click on to imperfectlynatural.com and you'll see the blog post there about William's books, and just click to vote and you'll be entered into a prize draw as well to win lots of organic goodies. So what else have I got to tell you about? I did a great interview with an Ayurvedic practitioner, author Annie Higham. So I'll be bringing you a clip from that soon. That was really fascinating, just getting the lowdown on what herbs and tinctures and foods can support us, through our well-being, particularly if we've just ditched the booze. Some really interesting stuff in there. And a reminder too on that interview of just how important it is to work with the seasons. You know, this is something that I've spoken about in books that I've written in the past, about how, you know, we were designed to eat seasonally. And I think most of us know that, but then we go and forget it, don't we? And we just fully expect to have our strawberries in winter when we should be having our root veg and, you know, and so on. So there were some really good reminders in that interview. I really, really enjoyed interviewing Annie. I've done a few other cool interviews, or I'm jacking them up, but I won't tell you about them just yet. But they'll be here soon. And if you've got any suggestions of anyone you'd like me to interview, please drop me a line or a message. Make sure you follow me on social media at Janie Lee Grace, and you can always drop me a message. Always reach out if you're struggling, because it really is no need to struggle alone. There's always help available. I did a blog post for Alcohol Change UK. I might have told you about that last week, about baby boomers. There's a whole bunch of stuff on their website, but they're also really good at signposting you to help that you might need. Don't do that thing where you go within. I was talking to a client the other day who lives alone, and so this, you know, once the kind of wine witch comes calling, once the addictive voice is in their head, it really is a very lonely place, because it's just you and then the voice in your head. And of course that voice in your head, the addictive voice, is very loud, and really railroads over any decisions, you know, you might have made if you let it. So, you know, the key is to be connected. You know, I'm going to say this, I say it every week, don't I? You know, the opposite of addiction is connection, as Johan Harry said in his TED talk. And being connected really makes the difference. That's why the Sober Club works so well, because, you know, we'll have someone who might pop up on our private Facebook group and just say, listen, guys, I'm struggling. I'm really struggling. And maybe explain a little bit of what's going on. And the comments and the support will be so totally non-judgmental, so supportive, actually kind. And in many cases, I guess not always, but in many cases, it turns it around. You know, it absolutely turns it around, because that feeling of being accountable adds another, you know, adds an extra layer. So, okay, maybe there isn't anyone else at home with you. It is just you and that voice in your head. But when you've shared what's going on with a bunch of people who really do seem to care about you, despite having never met you, you've got another level of accountability. Because if you do decide to trip up and go against what you've decided to do, oh, man, that's another bunch of people you've got to tell tomorrow. So it does make a difference. So make sure you check out the Sober Club if you haven't already. And it's not just for people starting out. We've got people in there who are a good few years sober, because, as you know, we focus on the everything. It isn't just, in inverted commas, about not drinking. It's everything else linked to optimum well-being and just living your best life, really. So we do cover the whole picture, the nutrition and the mindset and the fitness and the purpose and on. So thesoberclub.com, you'll find a link there as well under events to the Champneys events I'm doing, and eventually the other little retreats that I'm putting on. will be listed there. You've got a link there to buy Happy Healthy Sober, a signed copy if you're interested. And of course, the competitions. So I've already mentioned there's a chance to win William's book and also some of the Spirited Euphoria. We were talking to Anthony and Helen earlier. I'll see you same time next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.